it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Good Tuesday, everyone. Welcome to the VolQuest.com podcast, presented by our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions. We certainly appreciate their continued support of VolQuest.com. Give them a call today for a free estimate at 865-524-5888. Whether it's roofing, siding, windows, decking, fencing, whatever you need, Exterior Home Solutions will take care of you. I'm a proud customer. Thanks to those guys for getting the roof put on my house last week. And I promise you, you won't be disappointed with the craftsmanship and the work and the organization that they have at Exterior Home Solutions. So be sure and check them out online at exteriorhomesolutions.com or give them a call at 865-524-5888. Brent Hubbs, along with Austin Price, Grant Ramey, and Rob Lewis. We've got a ton of things to get to on this Tuesday. And we'll start with the Tennessee basketball team. Roster is starting to be formed. Right? How close are we to a roster, Grant Ramey? What's your starting five? You got that figured out yet?
Well, Tennessee's still got three open roster spots, I believe, after Igor Milicic, the 6'10 Charlotte forward, committed Monday morning. They added Felix Okpara on, what day was that, Thursday morning, I believe. That was their second one to go with Darlin Stone Dubar, the Hofstra wing. So they've had seven out the door with the 3 fifth-year seniors and the four guys in the portal. And they got three open spots left, and you know, now we're going to wait on Chaz Lanier for the next however many days we're going to wait on Chaz Lanier updates and see where that one goes, and figure out what they're going to do with the other two spots, regardless of what happens with Chaz, and go from there.
And Rob, they got bigger in the post, though. I mean, they brought in a couple of big men here. Talk. What are your thoughts on Igor and just what Tennessee is and Felix, what they've gotten done in the post here in the last week?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to like it. I mean, you lost a lot of length in Jonas, and you know, a quality rim protector. You maybe got a little better in that department with Felix Okpara. I mean, not nearly the offensive upside, or at least not we haven't seen that yet. But I think, you know, maybe a little a twitchier athlete than Jonas. You know, maybe a little more physical down low, and then Milicic, you know, a completely different player than Okpara, a guy that can step out, shot 38% from three, but he's not, you know, not a pick and pop four. Does not want to be known as a pick and pop four. You know, he led Charlotte in rebounding last year. He can get in there and bang it, but he does have some skill. So I mean, I think you have to like what Tennessee did there, and I think it will be tough to add another guy just because I mean, this, you look at the minutes right now when you add Milicic, Okpara, JP Estrella, who you're high on. Cade Phillips played a little bit this year. But I think in a perfect world, Rick Barnes would like to add a little more size. I don't know, you know, really how feasible that is to get a good quality guy out of the portal when you've got what looked to me like four quality bigs.
This feels like Igor's kind of the right, kind of a perfect type fit for Rick Barnes and his kind of makeup. Is that fair, Grant, or is that unfair? Rob, jump in here as well. It seems like just in quotes from him, and you talk to people about him, feels like that's a Rick Barnes kind of find, if you will.
I agree. The pedigree with his dad being the coach that he is and as well known of a coach overseas as he is and being a coach's kid and everything that comes with that. And then you just look at the size, 6'10", 224, and shooting at whatever he did, 47% from the field and 37% from the three-point line. I mean, it was always going to be – it felt like Igor or Cade Tyson, and I didn't ever think they were going to get both of those. I don't think you really – I mean, you want good basketball players, but I think if you added both of those, it would have been a little bit more crowded. And Igor has a little bit of a size – I mean, obviously a pretty big size advantage at 6'10 over Cade Tyson at 6'7". So I think Tennessee always felt like all along they were going to get one of those guys. I think Igor Milicic is a great get because of that size, and he can step out and shoot it. And, you know, I think it's a good culture fit in terms of the coach's kid who's going to come in, you know what you're going to get from him, the work and all that stuff, and he's going to be a good fit.
I mean, I thought he was the ultimate Rick guy when I talk to him on the phone. Like, I mean, just says all the right things. He's a worker, put his head down, isn't about all the fluff, you know. Called him and said, he goes, I'm an older guy, man. I'm not a big commitment guy. You're not, that's why he didn't announce his own commitment. Like, he doesn't care about any of that. You know, for both Rob and Grant, you know, obviously Chaz Lanier is the, you know, potentially the missing piece, right? I think we like this roster pretty good. He takes it up a whole nother level if he jumps in the boat. But those other two spots, probably developmental type guys. Because, I mean, you can't, if you start adding too many pieces, then it stunts the development of guys like Cam Carr and people like that, right?
To me, it doesn't. Like I said, I mean, I think in a perfect world, or I think in Rick Barnes' perfect world, he'd like to add, you know, somebody that could play 10 minutes a game at a point guard. He'd like to add somebody that can play, you know, 11, 12 minutes a game in the post or in foul trouble. But those, I mean, that's the portal. I mean, those guys don't go into the portal. You know, guys don't go to the portal looking to play 12 minutes a game somewhere. They go into the portal looking to, you know, play 28 minutes a game somewhere. So, I mean, maybe you can find that guy out there. I mean, maybe it's somebody that, you know, you have a tie with or you know, has played big minutes at a smaller school and now wants to see, you know, wants to try life in a Power 5 program, is willing to take a smaller role to do that. But I just think that's tough. And, you know, same thing in the backcourt when, you know, who wants to come and, you know, play behind an all-SEC point guard that's going to have the ball in his hands, you know, 80% of the time he's on the floor.
All right, I got two basketball questions for you guys before we shift gears here a little bit. First of all, for Igor, how did he land at Charlotte? Is this a late bloomer guy? Is this a late grow guy? Is this a guy that was overseas nobody knew about? How did he get to Charlotte to begin with, and what kind of leads it? Austin, you can jump in here too because you've talked to him. Kind of got him to the point where he was now a, quote, Power 5 player. And two, what are the chances that this is a full roster that Rick Barnes has this winter? Or is there a chance, because of what you were saying, Rob, that they just play a little bit shorthanded numbers-wise this fall?
Well, for Igor, for starter, I mean, he started out at Virginia. So, I mean, he knows. he's got Power 5 experience and just, you know, didn't play a lot there as a freshman. You know, wanted a bigger role. And I don't know this, and I shouldn't even mention. I don't know if COVID had anything to do with that at the time. I probably should have investigated that a little bit. But he's, you know, he started out in the ACC. He just played half the year and bounced. I mean, wanted a bigger role. Just wasn't for him. but I don't, Grant, I wouldn't be surprised to see him. I don't think there's panic to fill out those last three spots, I guess is what I'm saying.
No, I think best case scenario, if you can get Chaz Lanier, that's obviously a huge, huge addition. And then with those last two spots, I think you go developmental. I think maybe even leave one open for the summer, because they've been a program that in the past has not been afraid to bring guys in the summer and those late additions to signing classes. And you never it's not going to hurt you that much if you do have one open spot. So I think you're all in on Chaz Lanier. Obviously, they're already all in there. They're going to be all in on that until there's an answer there. And then some kind of developmental piece, because the line you're trying to walk is you don't want to take minutes away from Cam Carr, because you don't want him in the portal a year from now if he's not playing next season. You don't want, you know, and that's the same for other guys on this roster. Like, you're trying to add to this team without taking away from the guys that you already have on your roster, in terms of like what AP was talking about with stunting their growth and continuing to get those minutes, because you don't want to be a program that has to get 5-6 guys out of the portal every April and just do business that way. They still want to get prep guys in here like Cam Carr, sign them, develop them, keep them here for multiple seasons and see what they turn into.
And that's another guy we didn't mention yet, but Grant makes a great point about we all think that Rick would like to bring in, you know, more backcourt help. Well, I mean, if he does, how many minutes is Bishop Boswell going to play next year? How much is, you know, what's his developmental curve going to be like if you do bring in, you know, a guy that, you know, plays, you know, he's capable of playing 25 minutes a game as opposed to just a backup. So, I mean, it's the bottom line is, I mean, I don't think Coach Barnes is probably not as worried about that as we are right now. He just wants to get better. But it's, you know, I agree with Grant. You don't want to be, you know, trying to find 5 or 6 guys every spring to bring in.
How realistic is Chaz Lanier in the NBA draft?
I would be surprised, just because, you know, it's a 2-round draft and he's a North Florida kid. And you look at his numbers, he had huge numbers last season. He didn't do a ton his first 3 years in North Florida, which is something that, and it's all going to depend on how he tests, and, you know, all that whole, how that process plays out and all that stuff. But it just feels like you don't, you know, spots are so limited. It feels like it would be hard to imagine that he's a huge name in the draft, like maybe a second rounder, maybe a mid to late second rounder. I have no idea. That's just kind of my own guess, but it's just hard to imagine that he would make enough noise to stick in the NBA draft, opposed to, you know, Tennessee can sell him on that Dalton Connect role of come in and get as many shots as you need to score as much as you can to be that guy for this offense. Not that there's another Dalton out there, but I mean, you could imagine what that could do to his draft stock in terms of look where Dalton was a year ago and look where he is entering this NBA draft. So I think that's what you're trying to sell to him. And hopefully, and if you're Tennessee, you're hoping he doesn't make too much noise in that process.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Obviously, everybody needs to settle in for the Chaz Lanier sweepstakes, because that one's not going to happen anytime soon. Austin, you were talking about, and the guys were talking about basketball, that the balance of bringing in transfer guys and not stunning guys on your roster's growth and how that can affect you in the portal and that type of things. Tennessee with some football news in the transfer portal to start the week as well as the portal comes to a close on Tuesday.
Yeah, Christian Conyer going in the portal, and not a total surprise. Much like Elijah Herring, you know, Conyer, I think, found himself just kind of buried on the depth chart and wants to play. Doesn't want to sit around and just play special teams and play a reserve role when they don't rotate a crazy amount of DBs. Now, they rotated more last year than they have, but still not a ton. And kind of where you look at where he's at, you know, he's at best the fourth, you know, potentially the fifth or sixth corner. You know, you don't blame the kid. We'll see where he goes. Louisville, Cincinnati are two schools that I think, you know, have interest in him. You know, and wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, take a visit to either one of those schools. Virginia Tech is trying to make a play for, you know, Herring. They're trying to make a play for Conyer. They're trying to make a play for certain kids. So, again, it depends on how much help you need. But for Christian, you know, again, I think that, you know, just found himself kind of, you know, in a spot where, you know, path to the field was a little tougher here. He wants to get to the field quicker and doesn't want to sit back and wait. And, you know, I'm never going to blame a kid that, you know, wants to go out and try to play. You know, if you want to go and you're trying to get an extra $5,000, that's one thing. That's not him in this case. He just wants to get to the field. And the path here was a lot harder than maybe elsewhere.
Yeah, he was battling to be the fourth corner, essentially, as well. It was what it felt like he was looking at it as you come out of spring practice with the depth. Am I wrong in saying this? Does it feel like the defensive back position is the most transient position in the transfer portal? Is that going to be the hardest position to keep guys happy in? Because, hey, you need them for special teams, but you're only really playing five or six. I mean, I know we talk about rotating, but it's not like a defensive line rotation, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, but you have more defensive backs on your roster than maybe any other position. Is that just going to be a high volume position in terms of moving in the transfer portal every year? Is that just kind of the results of that, of the numbers and guys wanting to play?
Certainly feels that way, Brent. Feels like, especially with this staff, it feels like, you know, they're going to always be in play for some corners and try to go that route. So, you know, again, I think it makes it harder to take a ton of high school kids and develop them. And if you are a high school kid, you better be ready to go from the moment you get here. Cause if you're a little slow about picking things up, you get buried, it's tough to overcome that, you know, which is why it's, you know, impressive what, you know, Boo Carter got done this spring, right? You know, so, you know, again, I think that you hit the nail on the head. I think this is a position where you'll see Tennessee probably, I won't say live, but I'd say every year they're bringing in at least one corner.
I mean, Rob, it's that feels like a spot where you can get a guy, right? Whether he's another Power 5 guy who hasn't had an opportunity, whether he's, and I don't know, I was talking about corner, but I think you can throw safety and nickel in there as well. Whether he's a guy playing at a small school, we all know that, you know, the kid from Toledo was highly coveted by a lot of people, including retired coach in Tuscaloosa. But I mean, it feels like those guys are going to be in the portal. There's going to be a bevy of talent, athletic guys in the portal at that position, more so than finding a quality offensive tackle or even some other spots out there.
Yeah, and I don't know what the reason is for it, but it feels that way. I'd kind of like to see some data on it, because I think you're right, or at least, you know, you just look at Tennessee's roster, you know, in the last couple of years, and it absolutely, you know, feels that way. I mean, how many did they pluck this last time, you know, three or four, and you've had Brandon Turnage there in the past. You've had Kamal Haddon there in the past. You've had success, you know, with those guys, Judy Lawley, you know, just last year. So, I mean, Tennessee, even though the portal's not been, you know, running at this rate for two or three years now, Tennessee already has a pretty established track record of plucking defensive backs out of there. So I agree with you. I mean, I don't know what the reason for it is, but that certainly seems to be the case, that you can go in there and find some dudes that can help you.
All right,
Hubs, I got the reason. I played defensive back in high school. I played corner. We're divas. You know me. We're hard to keep happy, satisfied.
Well, your always hat game, on the move. I mean, so. the hat game's a real deal for you. I mean, you're very diva when it comes to your
Listen,
hat.
My defensive backs coach in high school, if I had a portal, I would have been in that thing in no time.
You'd have been rolling right out the door, right?
Day one in the portal. Filling out my paperwork.
How surprised are we as the portal comes to a close here that there's been this little movement with Tennessee to this point?
I don't know about surprise, but
I'm not surprised.
AP, I was going to say AP, I have a better take, but I just think it just speaks to, you know, some stability. And in this day and age, I think that's a pretty strong comment about your program.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all. Do I think they might have had one body? Yes. Would I was surprised if they had zero? No. I think it just boiled down to Tennessee's got 20 offensive linemen on the roster. If the O-line coach can't figure out somebody to put in there at left guard, and because everything else is kind of solidified, right? We're talking about the left guard spot. If Lampley or Carrick or, you know, Sham or whoever can't figure out a way to become the left guard, to me, that's a head scratcher. You have 20 linemen on the roster.
Yeah, for me, the question is not so much about who they brought in, because I think this roster are not brought in, because I think the roster is pretty set. Are you surprised more people haven't left the program, Austin?
I think, man, people are scared. I think a lot of kids are scared. They look up and they see T-Mac bouncing from here to there to everywhere. They see Tyler Barron and Wesley Walker doing what they're doing. They hear enough from other kids where they say grass isn't always greener. And it's like, I've only been here a year. Like, why do I need to bolt right now? And that'd be different. Like, if you're talking about older guys, right?
Right.
Like, we're talking about mostly those young kids. Like, are you really giving it enough time? Did you have unrealistic expectations when you got here? I think a lot of kids have to answer those type of questions. And so, and it goes back to what Rob said. You know, I think that, you know, Tennessee feels pretty good about, and the kids do, about where their culture's at. I know you talk about culture being a little bit overblown, but at the same time, I think kids are happier. I don't think anybody's upset. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's infighting. I don't think that, you know, that this is something where, like, kids are miserable. I think kids are really happier. Now, again, some don't want to play. Elijah Herring. Like, I'm not going to be a kid that wants to go play. But some kids, I think, are, like, you know, taking a look going, I don't want to knee-jerk this. I want to give it a little bit more time, which is why you give it the fall. And then if you're still not in factor, then you probably bounce.
Yeah, but AP, and Hubbard, both of you guys, don't you think that a lot of that is because it's so much emphasis, or it's so important to be transparent in recruiting? I think it always was, but I think more than ever nowadays, because if you promised a kid the moon, you know, 12 months ago, he's got, right, you know, he's got options now. He doesn't, I mean, you know, it's not like you can, you know, you sign him, aha, we tricked you. Now look at that, you know, the depth chart. We're actually bringing in two more guys at your position. I mean, I think you've got to have all your cards on the table more than ever with kids now. And if you've been up front with them from the time that they were, you know, their senior year in high school, hey, you're probably not going to be in the two deep until, you know, spring practice your sophomore year.
Yeah.
And I mean, you just, if you lie to kids, they have, them and their parents have immediate recourse now when they did not, you know, even 5-6 years ago.
Yes, true. I mean, I think that's where you have to have very transparent meetings with guys at the end of the season, you know, at the end of spring practice. I mean, Grant, I don't care what sport it is, you better be real with some people, you know, because they do have options. And you don't want to be a coach or a staff that you can't take them at their word, right? I mean, because that becomes an issue. And again, I don't think culture is overrated. I think they use, I think the term is used too much, but I think the reality of culture is very real. And in, and your culture better be good if you're going to have the retention rate that you're looking for.
You better be, like Rob said, transparent in the process to begin with, and you better be who you said you're going to be from the start as a coach. I think that speaks volumes to Josh and his staff that these guys know who they are, and they say who they are, and they live it day in and day out, because if you don't, if you're phony, you're probably going to get a lot of guys walking out the door. And I'm not surprised, because this is what AP's been talking about for a couple weeks. I'm jealous that the basketball program has all the transfer portal news and not the football program. I got to deal with it. So turn around and knock on that wood, Hubs, that this changes.
But you got to get better culture over there with the basketball.
But now here's
the, I know. What do we do to the culture, Rick?
Here's the difference, though. Basketball's got the one-time window. The spring, I mean, basketball's going to be crazy every spring.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm not saying you're going to have five every year or whatever the numbers are, but you're going to have high – you're going to have movement all around the country for in basketball because, one, they only have one window to go, and two, they can go anywhere. There's no restrictions on anywhere anybody can go. And in basketball, the impact you can make is vastly different than in football, right? I mean, you can hop from one team to another, and you leave one team that, you know, might be a tournament team, and the next thing you know, you jump to a team, and you're a Final Four pick in the preseason by a lot of teams. So I think basketball is only going to get crazier in the transfer portal, whereas football in the springtime is going to continue to, I think, diminish a little bit with December being, you know, the heavy movement time in football. But I think the basketball springtime is going to be wild.
And I'll throw one more difference in there is you can, and I don't, this will happen every year all the time, but you can have one booster decide he wants to go to the Final Four, and he can go a long way towards making that happen in basketball with NIL. You can't do that in football at all. You can't come close.
You can Florida Marlins a college basketball team.
Right, Tyson Grant? Chicken. Tyson
I mean,
Chicken.
You can, I mean, you can build a team in 1 year if you want to. I mean, say this is our, I mean, we've got enough pieces. We need one more piece or two pieces. We're all in for these two guys to go make a real run at this thing, which is different than, I mean, other than a quarterback, you really don't have that kind of impact in football.
And even
right. then, and it's always
going great.
And it's always going to seem exponentially crazier in basketball because it's 13 scholarship spots.
Right.
Like you can change, like this is not going to happen every April for Tennessee basketball because you had 3 5th-year seniors and you had four guys jump in the portal. And that's kind of more of a one-off kind of perfect storm situation where you have 7 open scholarship spots, but I mean, you've got teams like Arkansas where you make a coaching change, you have 0 scholarship guys on roster, and you're starting from scratch. I mean, literally from scratch in April. And it's, I mean, the number's always going to be crazy, but it's always going to seem even crazier because of, you know, the limited roster spots compared to, you know, football. You got however many 85 scholarship spots. It's going to be such a big, seem bigger, I guess, basketball-wise.
Well, and what
– go ahead. He won't have an outfit chop it.
I was going to say the crazier thing for me in basketball is the number of high-quality guys that are willing to move. Guys who are playing 25, you know, 26 minutes a game that are averaging double-double or they're averaging, you know, 18 points a game at a place that's winning and is doing well. And that's not good enough or it's about NIL or whatever. But I mean – to me, that's the crazy thing about basketball. It's not necessarily the numbers, AP. It's the quality of the guy that's jumping in the portal. Much more stars are moving in basketball than stars in football are moving. It feels that way to me.
No, it is. It is 100%. Because for the same reason that what you just said again a minute ago about the ability for one or two guys to totally impact a roster. Like, you know, unless you're a quarterback, it's truly hard to like impact the complete team in football. Just one. Now, as a collective unit, you might be able to, but it's just so you see more impactful players hitting the portal that can change the fortune of a program. And so, and the fact that you know, I think that you know, basketball has always been a little bit more cutting edge when it comes to even back in the day when it was under the table. It was always a little bit dirtier than football, right? It was a little more cutthroat than football. And so, you know, I think that it took it took the basketball side, the kind of the third parties a little while to get going, but now they've kind of found their path in the NIL era. And I think you're starting to see all that come to, you know, to flip back around.
Well, I mean,
I think the bigger names kind of mirrors the NBA. Sorry, Rob. I think it kind of mirrors the NBA where it's not one franchise for stars anymore. It's they're going to go wherever they feel like they're going to win. And it doesn't matter if they're the biggest name or whatever. Sorry, Rob, go ahead.
No, I was just going to pile on Hubbard's point. It's the quality of names that are, you know, the guys that, you know, Nietzsche Johnson from South Carolina, and they just had their best year in a decade. He's a, you know, he's getting all the shots and all the minutes he wants, and he's bouncing. I mean, Jonas, I mean, I know things didn't end great for Jonas against Purdue, but I mean, come on. I mean, when do you see a first team all league player, you know, leave? He's getting all the minutes, you know, he could stand here. So that's to your all's point. I mean, that to me is sort of the more eye opening development. And I don't know that was happening in the first couple of years. And I think it's to Grant's point about, you know, water finding its level with the third party guys getting up to speed, that I don't think you saw the I guess what I would say lateral movement, like Hunter Dickinson type, you know, guys moving from Kansas to Michigan, or, you know, Michigan to Kansas in the first couple of years. And now you're seeing, I mean, that's just doesn't even make you bat an eye when you see that.
But yeah. Go ahead, Rob. Go ahead, Abraham.
I just think that this is the new norm. I think basketball is caught up and they pass football. It's as simple as that. Like, I'm not saying football. I just think that you knew that it's kind of like, you know, like all the dinosaurs are females. They can't reproduce. Well, life finds a way. Basketball was always going to find a way to shift in this world. At least I thought so.
Yeah, I mean,
the craziest development for the basketball cycle is a kid going from Auburn to Alabama, Aiden Holloway. Roddy Gale Jr. going from Ohio State to Michigan, Andre Stojakovic going from Stanford to Cal. I guess there was a football one too, where the kid went from USC to UCLA back to USC.
Right? Yes.
So now it's like all bets are off. Anything goes.
Yeah, that's definitely for sure. And I think clearly basketball, the sport of basketball, has gotten more organized on the NIL front, because I think because of other things that were going on for years with AAU and shoe companies and everything else, there was a greater adjustment period for them to try to get themselves organized. And I think they have definitely gotten there. So there's a look at where Tennessee's at with a couple of pickups that Tennessee has. And yes, Austin.
I was going to say, since Eric's not here, this would be normally the question I would ask him, but Hubs, I'll ask you, since you brought up the Marlins, who is the catcher for the 97 Marlins?
I don't have any idea. Why would I know that?
Former Vol Brandon Johnson's dad.
Oh, that's right. It was. That's you're exactly right. There you go. I would have never guessed that, but now that totally makes sense that he was on that fire sale team, or that 1 year assembled team for a World Series. So plenty of portal talk as the portal comes to a close. We'll see what else happens on the Tennessee basketball front. We'll be chasing all of that. We got plenty more to discuss, including the NFL draft. And did Tennessee overachieve because of what happened in the draft, or is that not a direct correlation? We'll talk about that and a lot more coming up here on the VolQuest podcast, presented by our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions.
Severe weather can strike at any time in East Tennessee, and Mother Nature can do severe damage to the first and most important line of defense that you and your family have against Mother Nature, and that is your roof. Whenever she strikes, make sure that you call the people that I call. Make sure you trust the people that I trust, and that's my friends at Exterior Home Solutions, because they're more than friends, they're truly family.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Thanks again to our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions for their support of the VolQuest.com podcast. Be sure and tell your friends about them. Be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast as well. And don't forget to join us here join us at VolQuest.com, not just here on the podcast each week, but be sure and give our friends at Exterior Home Solutions a call, 865 865- 524-5888. All right, the NFL draft has come and gone. It was all about offensive players in the first round. For Tennessee, it was a long wait, Grant Ramey. Everybody had Jalen. A lot of people had Jalen Wright coming as the maybe even the first running back off the board. He ends up being the fourth or fifth running back off the board. Big takeaway for you for Tennessee in the NFL draft.
Well, my takeaway for Jalen is it's unfortunate that he didn't go in the third round or even the second round or whatever. Didn't hear his name called on Friday, day two at the draft. But if you're going to have to wait until round four to land with Miami and Mike McDaniel and that offense and what he can do with guys like Jalen Wright that have that kind of speed and that kind of explosiveness, I think that makes the wait a little bit more worth it. Obviously, you'd like to go earlier in the draft, but for him to go there and go to Miami and add to that offense and the crazy numbers that they've put up under Mike McDaniel, I think that's huge. I think it is, with them specifically, I think it doesn't matter how many guys they have in that offense. They're going to find a way to get everybody in there and productive and doing something. So I think that's huge for Jalen Wright. For Joe to go in the sixth round, that was earlier than I expected. I was thinking seventh round, maybe. I didn't expect Kamal Haddon to get drafted at all. So it's good for those guys that they heard their names called in the sixth round. And for Kamal to land with somebody like Kansas City is pretty incredible. But I don't know. I was surprised Jalen didn't go at least in the third. But I think he found a good landing spot with Miami.
All right. So when you look at what Tennessee did or didn't do in the draft, how do we use that as a direct correlation for this past season? And lots of credit deserves to this coaching staff that they overachieved, or is that whole notion just a not really comparing? That's an apples and oranges comparison type deal. How do you look at the draft and the success you have or didn't have based on the previous year when you look at it big picture wise?
Well, I thought the roster was always kind of pedestrian, you know, compared to the year before and compared to what I think the roster will be this fall. I thought the level of skill players was drastically down. You know, for the quarterback play, obviously, was, you know, not nearly as good. And so I thought that there was going to be a direct correlation to, you know, a little bit less as far as the win column. You know, I thought Tennessee did about what I thought they would do on the whole. I thought they would win one more game. They didn't win that Florida game. And so, and they lost to Missouri. So those are two winnable games that I thought they'd have a chance to win that would get them to 9. They only end up at 8 in the regular season. So, you know, I thought this was a team that was going to take a little bit of a step back. I think this team this fall is the opposite. I think it takes a step forward.
Anybody else?
I just wonder, and AP, you'll know the answer to this, and Hubbard, you too, better than me. Would any of those fifth-year guys that, you know, came back for NIL, you know, would anybody been a sixth- or seventh-round pick, you know, Omari or Javantes? I mean, does that change? You know, if Tennessee has 5 or 6, you know, picks, but, you know, 3 of them are day 3 picks, does that change your perception of?
Yeah, I mean, I think Omar Norman Lott gets drafted probably day 3. I think he's around 4th, 5th round, 6th round pick. You know, he came back because he has a chance to, you know, improve his stock, move up, you know. Bryson Easton's a guy that I think would have been a late round draft pick, you know, I think can improve his stock wholeheartedly with a really good year this coming fall. So there are multiple options that I think maybe could have got drafted at the tail end hubs that I think probably made the right decision as far as wanting to get drafted much higher a year from now if they play well this fall.
Yeah, I just think that I just don't think the correlation is – I just don't think it's apples to apples, right? Like if you had – I mean, and I know everybody looks at – I mean, Michigan, look at how many people they had drafted, right? I mean, it jumps out at you. Missouri had a really good year. Look at the number of people they had drafted. So there's plenty of examples of that, but I don't think it's just that plain and clear that you say, okay, if you have X number of players drafted, you should have been a really good team. If you didn't have X – you know, if you only had a small number – and you put up a good record, then that means you vastly overachieved. I just think that, Grant, I think there's so many other variables in there besides just a draft pick that you can say, okay, you overachieved or, oh, you're underachieved based on the number of NFL picks you had.
Yeah, because it's just a handful of picks regardless. I mean, that's a pretty small percentage of whatever your team represents for that season. I think everybody went into that last football season kind of feeling like it was a little bit of a gap year. Everybody's waiting to get to Nico and in that next season and all that stuff. And they were just kind of making do with what they had with Joe Milton and the guys around him. So I don't think it's a, like, I think Tennessee did good to get five guys drafted 2 years ago. I thought five was about right in last year. And you went into this draft thinking that it probably wasn't going to be very many, maybe two at most, or maybe three. Three was more than I was expecting. So I don't think it's, like you said, apples to apples, a direct correlation, because it's such a small percentage. But I think it does make sense when you went into that 2023 season thinking it wasn't going to be Heupel's best team. It wasn't going to be 2022. It wasn't probably going to be 2024. It was just going to kind of be there in between.
Now, I don't have the exact stats for this, but I bet you just looking at it, or at least just looking at it this year, I think there's more of a direct correlation, like at the very top. Like if you looked at the four playoff teams, I'm just thinking about how many guys that Washington had drafted that I didn't even know who they were until, I saw, Washington starting guard and starting center. Like, I think if you just looked at who made the playoffs, I bet there's a pretty stronger correlation to, at least high draft picks in those top four teams.
Yeah, I would say that's right. And again, part of that goes back to the quarterback play, right? I mean, look at the teams that made the playoff. Where are they with the quarterbacks? Mm-hmm. How was their quarterback play? They had really good quarterback play. Michael Penix goes high in the draft. J.J. McCarthy goes high in the draft. I mean, most of those guys had good quarterback play. And some of those were seniors and ended up being in the draft. So we'll see. I mean, next year feels like it's going to be a different year for Tennessee in the draft, partly because of some of those super seniors. And guys, I mean, James Pierce's name is showing up all over the place in early mock drafts. Now, we know what an early mock draft means. I mean, it's got about as much value as newspaper in the bottom of a birdcage right now, right? I mean, that's where an early mock draft is. I understand why we put them all out there. It's the same reason we do, bracketology in December when teams have played nine games and haven't got into conference play yet. But it's pretty clear James Pierce is on everybody's radar screen moving forward based on what he did last year.
If he does what he's supposed to do this fall, I think he is a lock top 10 pick. And at that point, then it's all about, who needs what, who's drafted where, right? I mean, James Pierce is going to be a guy that people love, the guys that can protect the quarterback, guys that can get to the quarterback, and quarterbacks. And so he's one of those that can get to the quarterback and does it at a high level. So if he does what he's supposed to, he to me is a top 10 pick. And then after that, it just depends on who's picking and all that.
Yeah, if he stays healthy, I mean, you can certainly look at him and say he's the number one edge guy right now in the draft, which says a lot about what he's done from a development standpoint, which gets me to this question. Last offseason, we heard Rodney Garner talk about at the end of spring practice, I need somebody to take a step. I need somebody at that Leo position to take a step. And he was basically challenging Pierce and Joseph. And Pierce obviously took that huge step. Who's the step guy? Who's the summer step guy? Is it Bryson Eason? Is it Dante Thornton? Give me your summer step guy, your guy who's going to take a real move forward. I don't think James Pierce drew the praise last summer that Jalen Wright did, but those were two guys who obviously took monumental steps for Tennessee in the offseason. Who's your step guy?
It's Eason for me. Okay. I'm getting the same vibes, from people over there about Eason that I did Jalen Wright last year. So, again, he's got to continue on. He has to, continue the upward trajectory, but he was fantastic in spring, and I think Josh Josephs is due for a bounce. I think he's due for a big step forward.
Want to predict?
You already mentioned Weber, and it's not. I mean, it'll be popular, but I think Dante Thornton. I mean, I think it's just. I mean, I just wonder how many times we've seen it. I mean, not just the Tennessee, where a guy comes in, whether he's a freshman or a transfer, just it's hype, and it's not easy out of the gate. It doesn't happen really fast, and then after he kind of gets his feet under him, you see the guy that you thought you were going to see a year later. So just so many physical tools there, and again, created a little buzz in spring. I'll take him.
The only problem with Dante is he was built up to be so much this time last year, I guess later in the year, going into the fall, and everything that they said about him in August and all that stuff. But I am willing to say that's somebody that I could see doing that based on what we saw him do the last half of the season before he got hurt at Missouri and the numbers he put up and was starting to produce at a little bit more of a consistent clip when he got moved around a little bit. It felt like he was settling in. And if he could take off from there, then I think he could be the guy that we've been kind of hearing about for the last calendar year, however long it's been.
All right, we'll see where those guys are as Tennessee gets ready to go into the summer workout deal. Final exams get ready to come up. They'll get a couple of 3 weeks off and then back at it to get started for the summer. Austin Price, recruiting never stops. Tennessee had a couple of guys in over the weekend. Give me a two-minute synopsis on Tennessee football recruiting exiting the month of April, heading into the busy month of May before we get to the craziness that is June.
Well, you know, Hubbard, they did a really nice job of kind of getting, you know, a nice start to this class. Obviously, it all starts with George McIntyre. But to get Rodarius Jackson in the boat, to get Joakim Dotson in the boat, you know, the two kids they had in this weekend, Zion Grady, Isaiah Gibson, two guys that Tennessee would love to have. Grady more of an edge, Gibson just more of a traditional D lineman, and someone that you know we'll see, you know, if he's going to take, you know, he's going to take visits, and I'm not sure how locked in he is with Southern Cal, and so we'll see kind of where this thing goes. But Grady's a guy that RPM's got predicted to Alabama. You know, again, getting him out of the state of Alabama will probably be a little tough, but you know, you got Jordan Ross out of Alabama a year ago, right? And so, like, you know, the more Tennessee can have success with edge guys, James Pierce, Josh Josephs, Caleb Herring, Jordan Ross, you know, it speaks to other edge guys in future classes. So, you know, I think Tennessee's in a really good spot heading to the month of May overall as a class. And then when you look at, you know, kind of where they go from here, I think May will be pretty much a quiet month, maybe one near the end of the month, maybe. Jalen Matthews is going to announce his commitment wherever he's going at the 1st of June, June 3rd, I believe. You know, Charles House is, I think, June 22nd. And, you know, there are other ones that will be in the month of June and the month of July. So June and July will be the profitable months as far as commitments. I think May will be a relatively quiet month on the whole.
And obviously Tennessee will have a big visit weekend, big visit opportunity with the event the last weekend of May. Do you think visits will taper down for guys a little bit here in the month of May? Or do you think you're going to see a bunch of guys going around the country, seeing schools in Tennessee, getting some of those guys passing through, you know, at different points in time?
I think it's possible you see some guys coming in. But on the whole, I think parents are going to go, I'm not taking five officials in June and going on three or four unofficials in May.
Like, after, you know, taking seven unofficials in April, yeah, for spring, I mean, practice, right?
Yeah, again, like, I just think that's where the parents will kick in and go, no, I'm not doing it. I don't want to do it. I've been gone all the time. I got these other kids that are in third grade and fourth grade, and they got to wrap up school and get ready for summer camps and this and that or whatever. I got a job, you know, I mean, what all the other real reasons for real life, why they can't do fantasy, you know, recruiting visits. And so I think, again, you might see a few, but I think on the whole, the A65 Live event will be the next time you see a ton of kids come to campus.
And we'll keep all of on track of all of that. We'll follow that as close as we can throughout the month of May, obviously, and anytime anybody's making news, we'll continue to have all that. Matt Ray will continue to update on guys on where they are coming out of all of their April visits as they kind of reset their boards individually. We'll be tracking the transfer portal. Obviously, lots of things going on the basketball side of things as that roster continues to be built. We'll continue to follow that as well. Lots and lots of things to discuss. Lots of things going on in Tennessee athletics. Obviously, the Tennessee baseball team with a huge series coming up this weekend at Florida, as they put themselves in a position to compete for a championship with three weekend sets left, as Tennessee has Florida, Vanderbilt, and South Carolina to close it out. We'll see where that shakes out with Arkansas, Texas A&M, and Kentucky all vying at the top as well. So Eric Kane's got all of your baseball coverage for you as well. That's going to do it for this edition of the VolQuest.com podcast, presented by our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions. Be sure and like and subscribe to this page. Be sure and subscribe to VolQuest.com. You can use our promo code that's available just through our YouTube subscribers for a special deal at VolQuest as well. Lots and lots of stuff going on. You see there, just hit the code, and you can check us out at VolQuest.com and be a part of everything, not just the two podcasts a week. But that's going to do it for this edition of the Tuesday podcast. He is Grant Ramey, Rob Lewis, and Austin Price. I'm Brent Hubbs. Thanks for joining us. Have a great rest of your Tuesday, everybody.
You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.